Hello, listeners, and welcome to the Downright Upright Show, the place to go to hear out loud and proud what Minnesotans are thinking. And I am your host, Philip Anthony. Thank you so much for joining us today, and I hope everyone is doing fantabulous.
Fantabulous, yes.
And fantabulous is fantastic. Fabulous put together twice as nice. Are you feeling fantabulous, Lala?
I am feeling fantabulous. I really am. That's a new word for me, but I'm excited to keep using it.
It's for my show. I made it up for my show. And believe me, if you were in the studio, you would see Lala. She looks fantabulous.
And, thank you.
My guest today is Lala Luscious. She is a multi-talented human. So bear with me because I have to enumerate all of her. You know, she wears many hats. She's a local drag performer, host of the podcast Snack Size, the podcast, a contributor to the Facebook entertainment website Twin Cities Gay Scene, which I love, the author of the book A Loitering Heart, a stage and screen performer, and her name is Lala Luscious. Welcome to the show, Lala.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Oh, you look great, by the way.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Yeah, thank you for coming.
It's early, so this is special. I don't normally do drag this early, but I'm happy to be here.
Right? So I always start the show by asking about my guest's beginnings so the listeners can learn more about them. So where were you born, raised, educated, etc.? And basically tell the listeners about your early life, Lala.
Gotcha. That's a great question. So born in Baltimore, Maryland, moved to Virginia, and then my family moved to Minnesota, but I ended up going to high school back in Virginia. I went to a military school. And then did college in Indiana, stayed there for 10 years. And that time is where I started drag. And then about 7 years ago, I moved to Minneapolis to further pursue my drag career. But yeah, so a little bit from all over in terms of that. I went to school to be a writer, but during that time, I found drag, and I just kind of knew that I love writing, and I'm so thankful that I was able to get back into it a little bit later in life, but that I really wanted to pursue being a drag queen and entertainer. So,
how was your experience in military school, being, you know, knowing your inner self, and was that a hard road to hoe?
It was and it wasn't. I actually really appreciate the experience because I think that it gave me a discipline, and it really gave me a sense of, like, what I feel my limit is and what my actual limit is two different things. And because I feel like where I was at in life to what I was experiencing, that was the hardest thing I've ever done in life. So even though I faced, like, technically bigger challenges, a lot of things became easier. And I feel like it's a big credit to why I've been able to have such success, just because, you know, I've been pushed to my limits before and made it through. So I always am pushing myself now. So I appreciate it from that perspective.
Awesome. I don't know how I would have got through that myself. I was, as my audience knows, I was a very gay boy.
Yes.
Very.
I was too. They tried to fix that and it just wasn't happening. So
it just wasn't happening.
It was not.
Yeah. So the name.
Yes.
The name.
Yes.
Lala Luscious.
Yes.
How did that happen?
You know, I had a couple names before. I first started as Hershey Coco.
I did.
And then I was Ginger Snaps for like a couple months. And I said, we got to move away from food. You know, at the age of 20, I thought I was just grown and mature. And I said, we can't have food names anymore. So I was watching, this is going to age me so much, TRL on MTV. And one of the VJ's names was Lala. And then I just asked a friend of mine what would go with it. And they said Luscious. And then I decided to add a Z, which was just a decision I made as a young person, and I wish I could change it. But the longer you have it, you can't change it, you know?
Right.
So I thought it was cute then, but now it's just caused pronunciation issues at every show. So I'm like, why did I do that? But
do people, like, try to pronounce it Luz?
Yes,
Luz?
Yes. Luz? It happens every time. Or I get Layla, and I'm just like, it's definitely – I love my name. I do love my name. But I think I could have not gone with the Z. If I could go back in time, I'd change that.
Well, if you want – my opinion. I love the name.
Thank you.
It's
thank
so
you.
Cute. It's amazing. All right. So the show is a safe space for members of the LGBTQ community, as you know. A la my flag, a la my fan.
The fan.
A la my little brooch. But I got somebody gave me this at Pride last year. A trans person.
Okay.
Who moved here because she felt safe.
Yeah.
She moved to Minnesota. So I have all of this merch around, so I can give a little bit of the rainbow
energy.
Rainbow energy.
Yes.
Yes. Mojo.
Yes.
So as my audience knows, I'm a married gay man, and my coming out experience wasn't very good. It was very difficult for me.
Yeah.
How difficult was your coming out journey before you finally did come out, and how old were you?
That's a great question. It's always hard for me to answer one because I had two coming outs, really. So coming out as gay and then coming out as a drag queen. I have to
That's true. You have to come out twice.
Yeah, you have to come out twice, yeah.
So holy baloney.
I can say, I will be honest, I never really came out as a gay person. Like, I can say that I think everybody just knew. And I think once I discovered what was going on, I didn't feel a need to explain because I've always just been my authentic self. So I never felt pressure to tell people. I mean, I did tell people, obviously, at some point. But it wasn't like a coming out story like I've seen other people where it was hard. I just knew that my family knew and that my friends knew. Like, even the ones I told, I remember, I think the first person I told was in middle school. And they were just like, yeah, we knew. So it wasn't a big thing for me. Now, coming out as a drag queen, that was very challenging.
I can imagine.
Yeah, so I come from a very successful black family, and there's ideals about what black men should or shouldn't be doing. And I mean, really just men in general in society, of course. But I mean, it caused me to be a source of disappointment for my family for many years. We didn't talk for about a decade.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, but I think it really, for me, it just came to the point where it's like, I can't not be myself anymore. And I can't not live my life for me. And if that means that people have to go, and it wasn't just family, it was all different types of people, then that's just what's going to have to happen. I think that the beautiful part of it is that by letting that energy go, it allows for the people that are right for you and you are meant to meet to come into your life. So I think that if I had never made that decision, I've met some amazing people and done some amazing things, as we've talked about already, that wouldn't have happened if I didn't make that choice. So
yeah. So basically, when you came out as gay, well, you said you didn't actually come out as gay to your parents, but they knew, kind of thing.
I just think everybody knew. I was always myself. Yeah, me too. I was always my boy, and I was like, they just knew.
Yeah, I didn't say, hi, mom, gay.
Yeah.
I mean, it was kind of obvious.
Yeah.
It was, you know. But the drag queen coming out, see, that's what a lot of people don't get.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people come out twice when they're drag queens. They have to go through that. And some people, you know, when they do drag, they get, like, what's going on today with the trans community.
Yes.
You know, they are getting harassed, bullied.
Yeah.
I could go, I don't want to get negative, but a lot of negative things. And maybe it was easier for you to come out in drag back then than it would be now, right?
No. So I actually started, my first performance was a year before RuPaul's Drag Race ever aired, which really changed the face of drag. So I was very much in a time where people didn't understand the difference between, you know, doing drag or, you know, wanting to, you know, privately cross-dress at home or being a trans person, or they didn't understand all those things. It was all the same thing to them. So, I mean, I remember a very close call. I wanted to do drag so bad in my middle of nowhere town in Indiana. Like, I used to dress up and go to the clubs, and if the DJ played a song, I knew I would just start performing. That's how I got my start outside of my college shows. And, like, one time I came very close to getting beat up in the bathroom by some men, and the security there, they really loved and supported me, and they were able to stop it before I even got hit or anything. Like, nothing happened, but it was not accepted at the time.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, yeah. I've had friends that do drag, and, like, they've had, like, knives pulled out on them, like, around that time. Like, it was, thankfully, that didn't happen to me. I just wasn't there for that particular event. But, yeah, it was rough to start. Now it's very different, so.
So you think it's better now? Even with all this anti-drag queen legislation being passed in different states?
You know what? I think I do. This is really recent in my timeline for me, this anti-drag stuff. I felt like for a while there, everyone was cool with a drag queen. Like, they understood that it was entertainment, which it always has been. I mean, these people have watched, you know, Mrs. Doubtfire or a Tyler Perry movie. So, but now they're accepting it more on, like, you know, a social level, and they understand what it is. I don't think that outside of entertainment, you know, accepting, you know, just any part of the queer culture, it always could be better. But I think that for a while, drag was pretty cool. And then, I don't know, I guess they needed something to pick on lately. So now we got all this legislation stuff.
Yeah. I've had friends tell me the reason they think that there is a pushback against the drag community is because people on the other side of the aisle are not educated. They don't understand there's a difference between drag, mm-hmm. which was entertainment.
Yeah.
And trans, or yes. people who are living in their gender.
And you can do both. Yeah.
And you could do both.
Yeah.
And why bother them?
Yeah.
You know, this is their true selves. This is what they want to do. It's not hurting anybody. And so I think that's the pushback, don't you think? That today with drag, I mean.
Yeah. I think when you look at drag, it just sort of is just one of the most beautiful expressions of freedom.
Oh, it's beautiful.
And a part of living in America is that people are always trying to regulate someone's freedom. And we spent so many years ignored that when we came to the spotlight and people saw how happy and free we are, they have to try to regulate that. And I think that that's what's happening.
Yeah. So I love how you open your podcast, Snack Size the Podcast, with, hey, snacks.
Yes.
Can you do it? Say it one more time.
Hey, snacks.
Yeah, there it is. Hey, snacks. When referring to your audience. I love that. That's so cute. My audience, I don't have a name for them. I just love
them.
Oh,
you got to get one.
I got to think of something. Yeah. You got me going with that. Yeah. So how and why did you come up with that intro when you start your podcast? Hey, snacks.
Yeah. So
what is a snack?
Some people may have heard of it, but looking like a snack is a term that is kind of in like popular hip hop media culture, saying that you look hot or you look, you know, attractive, physically attractive. So I did sort of a play on it because normally the term is applied to people who are like skinny and stuff like that. Well, I'm very... have a lot of grandeur, large and in charge. And so I thought it'd be funny if I started calling myself a snack, and then it just kind of took on. Yeah. And so I think that through my podcast, I wanted to create a conversation that being a snack is more of a mindset than it is a physical thing. And you deserve to feel good about yourself anytime. So I want everybody to feel like a snack for sure.
You also say you are fabulous.
Yes.
Now, you notice how I opened my show?
Well, it's fantabulous, yes.
Yeah, both of them.
Yes. I think it's really important that you feel good about what you're doing. And it doesn't have to be drag, which is why I incorporate so many different perspectives on my show. But I think that people look at drag, they're like, oh, that must be fabulous. I was like, you can be fabulous without a wig and makeup. You can just love what you're doing. So
yeah. So now, you already told me that Lala Luscious wasn't your first name. You had different personifications, I guess, of your name, of your identity.
I had to grow up a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So do you remember the first time you went up on stage in drag? I don't know if it was...
like it was yesterday, of course.
Coco, or it was... somebody else, or
you know, I think my very first time, I just like the very, very, very first time that I did it, I went to just go watch the Rocky Horror Picture Show, which is kind of like a thing that queer people do. You know, yeah, we all have our Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Frankenfurter.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know what I was. I dressed up in some like Party City Halloween costume, but that was my first time like going out. But my first time on stage, so I got asked to do a college show, and one of the queens, we were hiring queens from Chicago because we were in a part of Indiana that was close to Chicago. But the school said, if you want to have a show, a student has to do it. Well, in the Gay Straight Alliance at my school, there was only two openly gay men. And not that anybody can do drag. I just wanted to say that. It's just at that time, all the straight guys were not going to. So it was between me and the other gay guy. And we argued because I was still holding on to that, like, part of masculinity. And I just thought this was just so overly feminine that I wasn't, like, quite ready to do it on that level yet. So it came down to the day before we turned in the budget. I said, I'm going to do it. I didn't really have any outfits that I liked. So I took a bed sheet and I took a bunch of safety pins and I made a... it doesn't look like a bed sheet. I'm not going to call it a fabulous gown, but it did look like a bed sheet. I had no heels because my feet were so big. I have big feet. Somebody randomly had a wig on an all-male campus that I borrowed and never gave back. If they're listening, I'm sorry. And I did my first performance. And honestly, I never stopped. I was so scared to do it on that level. And, like, it was just, like, the minute it happened, like, I just wanted to keep doing it, and I really have ever since. So.
It's the feedback from the audience.
Yes, it was so much fun. And there's nothing like your first time.
Putting the money in there. And
I don't even know if there was that much money, because, like, this is before
Drag Race
came out. Yeah, yeah.
You know, when I used to go to drag shows as a youngin', as they say, You had to put money up in there. Otherwise, you were, you know.
Yeah, we're dealing with a campus of people that had never even seen anything like this before. So I don't even remember if there was any money, but I had a blast. I had the best time.
Oh, my goodness. So also through my legwork, I discovered that you appeared on stage at some prestigious stages in the Twin Cities.
Yes.
Such as First Ave.
Yes.
And the Ordway in St. Paul.
Yeah.
So what shows were you appearing in and at those venues, and how was that experience for you?
Yeah, so the Ordway was with a performing group that kind of got dissolved after the pandemic, but we just talked about bringing it back because they actually are my backup dancers right now, the directors. But it's called Red Hot Rascals. It was an eclectic cabaret that it featured burlesque, like circus acts, magicians, and of course me as drag. So we got to do...
Were you like the MC?
I'm in the numbers too, but yeah.
Oh, you do so, numbers.
Yeah, I wasn't originally the MC. You know, they hired me because I was really pretty, and they just said, "Stand here and
imagine.
Be pretty. And we're going to dance around you, and it's going to be amazing." And that's exactly what it was. I dance now, but
were you singing live or lip syncing?
Lip syncing. I'm going to tell you. I am so fortunate that I met these people, but I don't know why they pitched me because I'm working with like the most talented people ever. I was like, I just do really good makeup. And they're like, we still want you in this. So I started there. And then that's now taken off where I still work with those people. They do my backup dancing because I got a little bit more confident in my dancing skills. So now I still work with them and we're talking about bringing that group back. So I hope that happens and we get more cool opportunities. First Ave, what can I say? Both times I was there, I was doing Flip Phone Superstar, the popular entertainment company in Minneapolis. I like to compete. I like to do competitions. So I have not won that yet, but I have a blast. I mean, just to be in such a historic space as any type of entertainer is such an honor. Just to get to stand where so many great people have stood and get to do what you do in your art. And First Ave is – they have a lot of drag, and I really am glad that they support the community like that.
Yeah. Talking about lip syncing, I love RuPaul's Drag Race.
Yes!
I just want you to know I love it.
Yes.
Would you ever – have you ever thought about like lip syncing for your life? Would you ever like want to do that? Is that in your bailiwick,
or is it
something that you think, I'm over that?
Like, I mean, you're talking about specifically on the TV show or just in general?
Have you ever done lip sync for your life in different competitions?
Oh, yeah. So competing in lip sync for your life is very much taken away from the local drag community. I mean, that is a drag competition. When I moved here.
Oh, it wasn't created by RuPaul, then.
Not
it's been
really.
Around forever.
Not and, really, yeah. You have competitions where if you're a newer queen, it's they call it like an amateur night. Sometimes it's an open stage, but there's only maybe like, I don't know, like a $50 prize, and you have to lip sync off to get that done. So I did a competition when I moved here at the Saloon called Go Tuck Yourself. I ended up winning. Yeah, I ended up winning.
What is
that
it called?
Go Tuck Yourself. Yes, Go Tuck Yourself. That was the
okay.
thing. And I ended up winning that because they liked me so much. I ended up hosting it while it was going
so
on.
So Shantae, you stay.
Yeah. I became the host of the whole entire show. And so that's honestly how I got my start. I only had to do one amateur competition, and then I have been professional ever since in the Twin Cities. I'm very blessed in that way. But yeah, that's what I was doing, lip syncing for my life to get to the top.
Do you do a lot of clubs still today, like in the Twin Cities area?
Yes, I fully support this model. So you can pretty much go to any of the clubs and find one of the competitions. They're usually in the middle of the week. I find them highly entertaining because I love seeing new performers because they aren't so experience, so they actually end up doing drag in a really interesting way that you wouldn't have the thought of, and you just see some really fun people and passionate people trying really hard to make it. So I love going to those shows. But I also feel that there is something missing in the fact that it's not in a professional setting. So a lot of these queens, they win these competitions, but they've never done like a real booking, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I do wish that there was just a little bit more opportunities for new people to get work alongside professionals and get some like training in that way.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we're going to take an early break.
Okay.
Because I hate to rush the next question. We only have 56 seconds. So we'll take a quick break, and then when we come back, we'll talk about Twin Cities gay scene.
Yes!
That's how I met you.
Yes.
So I am Philip Anthony. This is the Downright Upright Show here on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
On earth, give me life.
listeners, and welcome back to the Downright Upright Show. I am Philip Anthony, your host, and I'm here again with Lala Luscious, the amazing.
Yes, hi, listeners.
Lala Luscious. By now, my audience has realized you wear many hats, and I don't only mean when you're in drag.
Yes.
Do you wear hats, by the way, in drag?
Hats in drag, I mean, it feels like. Honestly, a hat would be cooler. I should probably incorporate that into my ass because wigs are hot.
Or a turban or something. Yeah.
Yes.
So besides being a drag performer and possessing many other talents, you are also a writer.
Yes.
And an author. And you are a contributor to the Twin Cities gay scene. Can you share with the audience what Twin Cities gay scene is all about?
Sure. It's basically just a source for queer entertainment, queer media, queer happenings in the cities. Part of what I do with Snack Scene is it's a companion to my podcast, Snack Size, where I do offer a little bit of life advice, but it's mostly entertainment and local events, and we keep it fun and light. And I also interview a lot of acts that are coming to town. I know, like, when Jonathan Van Ness was Queer Eye from here, I got to talk to him on the phone, thanks to Gacy. That was so amazing. Billy Porter, I got to talk to him on the phone, too. Yes, yes.
Did you meet him?
I did not meet him, but I did go to the show, and I talked to him on the phone, and he is just as, like, just everything you would think about his personality
vivacious.
Is exactly the way he is on the phone, for sure.
Oh, my goodness. So Twin Cities gay scene is on Facebook.
Yes.
And you can also, they have a website too,
yes.
don't they?
Yeah, Facebook and a website.
Facebook and a website. And that's where you can go to learn about what's coming up in the gay scene.
Yeah. There's also a really cool opportunity. They give away a lot of free tickets, and I don't think people know about that. You have to go to the website to enter, but I'm not just talking about local queer events. I mean, they've given away tickets to Janet Jackson, Pink, like big, big things. So
wow.
I just totally encourage people to go and take advantage of that because I know at one point I was a, you know, struggling artist that couldn't afford things in gay scene before I even wrote for them was able to give me some really cool experiences too. So.
Oh wow! Well, thanks for that, and the gay community must be and the LGBTQ community thanks you because we like to go and see our fellow community members,
and it's better when it's free too. You know,
that's for sure. Yes, absolutely. We discuss Snack Size, the podcast, but you have more snacks for us. Can you talk about Snack Scene? Did we talk about Snack Scene at all?
Yeah, that's for that's what I write for Twin Cities Gay Scene. So basically,
isn't
lately,
that like a newspaper or something? Or
it's so each writer has their own scene within the gay scene. Uh-huh. So the Twin Cities Gay Scene. So mine is called Snack Scene. Occasionally, I do some life advice stuff, but mostly I've just switched to entertainment interviews. I think that
like a Dear Abby thing.
Yeah. I used to do that, and it kind of used to like run in line with what I talked about on my podcast, but then I started getting opportunities. Like, I saw the other writers, and they were like interviewing people, and I was like, I'd kind of rather do that. So it sort of shifted to just media now, but I am working on some stuff coming up that'll get back to its original intent for sure.
Oh, nice. Well, as an author,
yes.
You completed your debut book entitled A Loitering Heart.
Yes.
In 2022, wasn't it?
Yes, that's correct.
And it's a collection of poems. Now, can you talk about that? What kind of poems are they? Are they LGBT oriented or general poems? Or
I will say my book is a complete departure for the rest of my brand. That it's a little bit heavy. A little bit of backstory with me in poetry. When I was in eighth grade, I was procrastinating on a very big assignment, and my mom came and she was like, "If you're gonna get in trouble if you don't start this," I was like, "I'm gonna write a poetry book overnight." And she's like, "Really?" And I was like, "Yes, yes, I am." I did it. I got an A+, and one of the poems ended up getting published. So I knew that poetry, at that point, poetry became very important to me, and I pursued it a lot as a younger child. So this book is actually something I started in college. And then when I had some opportunities, like being on Jay Leno's show, and I had the web series coming out, I was like, I think
Wait,
I should
what?
Have a book. Yes, I was on Jay Leno's game show, You Bet Your Life. Yes, you will see me in the reruns. I'm not in drag, but if you watch the whole episode, I do talk about drag and stuff. So
MG.
It's me. Yes. Yeah.
Did you win?
I did. I am the richest contestant. At least at that point in the show, I am the richest contestant that we got the most money. And the funny thing is that I did not know a single question. My partner knew everything. And I was like, I am so thankful I got paired with the right person because I didn't know a single answer.
That's right. You have to have – there's two people
yeah,
that guess the answers. Yeah.
And I don't know what – I don't even remember what the question was, but I just remember the answer was boomerang, and I was never going to guess it. And my partner was just like, it's boomerang. And then, like, we won, and we've won the most money on the history of the show, at least at that time. I'll be honest. I haven't watched it since.
Well, congratulations. That's amazing.
But, yeah.
I interrupted you about talking about your book, so I apologize. It's
I started it 10 years ago, and I knew I wanted a book, so it was something I had started. And what it explores is the falling out of love, and it's a story told over poems about the end of the relationship. The ending does offer some happiness, but I did just an exploration of heartbreak through poetry. It was honestly so hard to finish because I truly am. Like, everything you see of me on social media, I'm very much in a happy place in life. So you can kind of tell that some of the work that I did later, because it's not as heavy. But I always knew I wanted to finish the book. So I did that as a part of my I'm doing big things in my life. So, yeah, now it's out. And I'm working on a second, too. Yeah.
Good.
Yes.
Oh, can't wait. Yes. So at the beginning – so basically tell me if I'm right or wrong. At the beginning of the book, it's more bleak. And then as it progresses, you're saying, because your life changed, it was like more like a journey for you, that book, or
– Yeah, so – Right? When I wrote some of the poems in the book, I was actually going through a breakup in college, and I was about twice as dramatic as I am now. So,
I'm sorry.
I am.
Are you
I am.
Single?
That has not recently changed.
Oh, good.
Very recently. That's
congratulations.
Not something I'm going to talk about on air, but thank you.
Congratulations.
But so I was going through that, so it was just very heavy. And you know, when you're young, you just take things so much harder.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, you haven't really had any.
Because you feel like, you know.
It's the end of the world.
What
all
don't they
stuff.
Like about yes, me? Actually. What's wrong with me kind of thing?
Yeah, yeah. And it was very much reflected in the poetry. The way I arranged them, though, is just that there's a problem. It's not super specific. I have a really funny first poem where it's actually written about my gay friends, but I reimagine them as women and, like, talking about what it takes to keep a man. So that's kind of how it starts. And then you kind of see things disintegrate. And then at the end, things pick back up. So it gets a little bit happy at the end. It's not, like, super happy, but it's a positive ending. Because, I mean, I don't like to end things, like, so, like, heavy and devastating. I want there to be a little hope. But my next book is going to be Celebrating Loving Yourself, Enjoy. Being a snack.
Being a snack.
Being a snack.
Have you started it yet? Are you working on it?
I have. I'm super excited about it. I am going to apply for some grants. I did not realize. The first one I did completely on my own. I didn't realize what an undertaking it would be. So I think I have enough of a following now that, you know, I have some things on my resume that I'm going to get some grants and hopefully get it out. But I am excited about it. I actually just did a reading of it at a thing called Black Artist Rising, and it was the first time I had read it for anybody, and they loved it, so I'm excited to see.
Do you have a working title?
I don't. You know, that's the last thing I do. Like, I really have to see the whole thing together before I title it. Like, I just have to see what it is.
But goes in a different direction.
It is a completely different direction, yeah. And I want it to be positive, because honestly, I think that there is such a beautiful part of my story that's sad, but I don't call it not beautiful. But there is a wonderful part in which I'm very blessed to have all the things that I have and be able to do the things that I do and, you know, to even in some cases just be alive with the world we're in right now. So I want to celebrate that too.
Of course. Yeah. But a lot of poets like yourself also write songs.
Yeah.
Because poetry and music go hand in hand.
They do.
You can write lyrics for – have you done that as well?
I have been always told that I should, but I just – writing for me has just always been just whatever I feel like it. And I'm not horribly musically inclined other than the fact I love some Beyonce and, you know, all that stuff. But I wouldn't consider myself like a musical – like – I couldn't create music. So.
Although you have some, you said.
I have some.
Karaoke.
But I used to sing. I used to be in choir back in the day. But yeah, no, if someone came to me and said, I really love your work, I want you to write something, I'd probably do it. But
Well, she's offering that.
Hey.
If you write melody and you need a good lyricist.
Yes. You know, I love collaborating with all types of artists.
You can collaborate with Lala.
Yes.
There we go. So let's talk about your show.
Yes.
Power.
Yes.
The word.
Power.
Power.
Yes. Yes.
I love that word.
Thank you.
Recently concluded its run, hasn't it? But I heard that there is something else happening now.
Yeah. So I am going to do a couple shows over Pride. We'll be the Thursday night of Pride Week. We'll be at the Black Heart of St. Paul. And then we'll be doing some brunches at Ty's Rooftop and Lounge in Uptown on Saturday. And I got really it was a show that was focused on uplifting entertainers that are trans and or identify as of color. And so it was a really, really important show to have. But I don't think that what people see on the back end is that directing the show is quite a labor of love, quite a thankless job. And I just am kind of, you know, in my mid-30s. And I said, you know, like, I love shows, but I want to do other things. And this takes up so much of my time because I won't, you know, put only half of me into
it. Did you write the show?
No, I directed it. Yeah, I directed it. So I got an opportunity to start it at the Black Heart of St. Paul because, you know, we noticed the need for the entertainers of color in the city. It's been a struggle to get them booked. I actually had a really devastating experience where I tried to start an all-black show and it got canceled. Nobody showed up, like in front of a newspaper and everything. That was a really hard time for me. Yeah, so I was a little bit nervous to start it. Yeah. I was a little bit nervous to start this particular show, but it ended up working wonderfully. We've been all over the Twin Cities. We were featured in Minneapolis St. Paul Magazine and Minnesota Monthly. It ended up being just a really big thing. And so ending it was just a choice for me to say, like, this is successful, and I wanted to end on a successful note, and I want to go do other things now, but I've been able to give a lot of entertainers of colors visibility, and now I see them booked all over, whereas they weren't before, so. But we still want to get back together, so for Pride, we're gonna do a couple shows, but that'll be it. That we're not coming back regularly, so.
So Power is going to be back at Pride.
Yeah, for Pride Week. So we'll be at Black Heart of St. Paul. We will do the park, but I don't have the details.
Oh, the park too.
Yes, I don't know. I don't have the details, but I will get that on social media as soon as I do. And then,
well, Lala, I have to tell you, AM 950, we have a tent there.
Yes.
So we'll stop by.
Guess
who's going to visit me?
Yes, I will definitely stop by and say hey for sure. I would love that.
Hey, and I would like to see the show.
Yeah.
Maybe if you could give me maybe email me some information, and when you get
when I know, everybody else will know.
Yeah, because I would love to see that. I've heard about the show.
Yeah.
Is it uplifting or kind of sad?
You know, one of the things that I do is I just ask everybody to come and bring their best. I think it's highly uplifting in that way. A lot of drag shows have themes and stuff like that, and I respect people who do themes and can do amazing impersonations. It is an art form in and of itself within, mm-hmm. you know, an already hard art form, but I chose people because I was like, I like what you do, and I want you to come be your best, and that way everybody shines, and it really is a positive show in that way. I miss it a lot. I miss doing it a lot someday, so I'm excited to get back together.
Well, directing is hard.
I mean, it's
you have
draining.
To get everybody.
Yeah.
It's very different than actually doing the performance.
Yes.
Because you have to tell people where to stand, where to go, and what to do. And
yes. And then when you're also a performer yourself, you're still getting yourself together in that way while managing other people. And I don't regret doing it. I just took up so much time. I couldn't do other exciting things that I want to do. So it was time. And it was successful. Who wants, you know, no one wants to end when it's dried up, you know? Mm-hmm. I wanted to end on a high note, and that's what we did.
Well, good for you. Yeah. Well, like I said, I told the audience when I introduced you that you wear a million hats.
Yes.
I mean, when I had to prepare this show, this is probably one of the most difficult because you've done everything.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing left to do
for
you.
There's so much.
Really?
And I think that's the thing about me is that, like, I think people see my resume and they're like, you've done a lot. And in my mind, I'm just like, okay, what's next? What's next? What's next? Like, I don't even look at the past.
Do you know what's next?
I do. I'm starting a makeup line. I'm diving into that. And it's called Snacks by Lala. S-N-A-X.
Oh, nice.
Yes. I'm super excited.
Is it in the works now, or are you thinking of doing it? Or?
No, we're getting it done. So I have a lot coming up in April, which we'll probably get to with a big performance. So I've kind of really been in rehearsals and focused on that. But we did launch a preview. It's on Instagram and Facebook, Snacks by Lala, where you can see all the colors. I'm starting with lips. So it'll be a matte lipstick, a gloss, and then I will be having lip liners. And then later this year, I want to do a blush. So, and I think I'm just going to stick it's the lips and cheeks, just because I feel like those are my biggest features in drag, and I think it'd be fun just to have a line of stuff that just focuses on that. So
yeah, wow.
Yes.
Blush. I remember my mother used to call it rouge.
That's yes.
The old school people.
Yes. When I first started drag, it was my favorite product, and honestly, like, my whole face would be red. Like, that was just, I thought I was so beautiful with a whole just looking like a candy cane.
Red. Yeah.
Just red.
Now, we're going to talk about your role.
Yes.
In the web series, mm-hmm. It's Not You. Remind me also at the end of the show to talk about what your future, yeah. You know, what's coming up, because you're really excited about something.
Yes.
I could see it in your eyes.
Yes.
So we're going to talk about that. But I want to talk about It's Not You.
Yes.
Okay. It's a web series.
Yes, it is.
And you play a character named Andre. Can you talk about that character and the show itself?
So I got a message on Instagram from Allison Gisso, who is a Cameroon-American filmmaker here in the Twin Cities.
Oh, really?
Yeah, female director, and just an amazing person, beautiful to work with. We have a whole episode of my podcast together, too, if people are interested in learning more about her and what we did. But
say her name again so they
Allison Gesu, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, she runs Genie Productions. That's DJINI Productions, and amazing woman. Just, she was the president of Minnesota Women in Film and Television for a while, and she just recently had a baby, so I think she stepped down from that. But getting to work with her, really, it truly changed my life. I met so many friends and amazing things. But anyway, she messaged me and said, "Do you know anyone that can play this role?" And so I read over the role and I was like, "This sounds like just like me." Like, it doesn't even sound like it's going to be too much acting at all. Like, it sounds just like my life. So I went in and read, and I'm impatient. I remember it took way too long in my mind, but maybe it didn't take that long. But I ended up getting it after a while, and we shot all over the Twin Cities over about a week. It might have been a little bit longer. I technically wasn't a lead role. I did get advertised as a lead role because I love everybody in the production, but I was the best one.
Uh-oh. I'm scared of you.
The best one. But yeah, so when you see the advertising, I've been in a little bit more than lines I have, I should say. But I had a blast, and I felt just so at home doing something on set like that. It was such a beautiful experience. Anybody wants to put me in any type of film, I would totally do it again.
Yep. You heard that here, folks. Yeah, Lala is looking for a role.
Yes, I am looking for a role.
She wants to win the Academy Award right now.
I do, one day. But yeah, super amazing. And honestly, just a DM on Instagram. That was how it started.
So, Andre.
Yes.
What is it about Andre that drew you to that role?
Oh, I don't want to, like, throw any shade, but when we read the script the first time, I could just tell it was not written by a queer person. And so,
you play a straight guy in this?
No. Oh. It was a gay character, but the lines were not written by a gay person. Because I remember we had the reading, and I got in the meeting, and I said, "Look," I said, "with all due respect, I am a gay man in this, and he's never said girl at all." So they were just like, "Just add all that in." So really, I got to create, like, this character in my head myself, and it was so much fun. I mean, I think
girl.
I just turned it. Yes, I know. You see what I'm saying? Like, I was like,
I called you that.
Who doesn't say that? And I was like, so we got to add some authenticity. So I mean, it very much was just me amplifying the personality I already have and infusing it into that character, and it was fun to create.
Wow.
Yeah.
Chris, now I'm old.
Yeah.
I'm not a, you know, I made it look beautiful on camera, but.
Absolutely.
But I remember growing up, we had our own language.
Yes.
The gay community back in the 70s and 80s. We used Miss Thing.
Yes.
And Snap.
Yes.
One Snap. Hi, Miss Thing. That's how we spoke to each other.
Yes.
It was. Now today they would look at you like, what's wrong with this guy?
Oh,
you
know, no. My friend group would totally be here for it. Yeah. No, we would laugh. I would love it.
Yeah. This thing is great. Anyway, so now, after we come back from this next break,
yes.
We're going to talk about current events.
Yes.
And we have a part of the show I'd like to call The Shift. And I'll explain why it's called that after these brief messages. Again, my name is Philip Anthony, and this is the Downright Upright Show here on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
people now. Smile on your brother, everybody get together. Try to love one another right now.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Downright Upright Show. My name's Philip Anthony. And again, I'm back with my guest, Lala Luscious.
Hello again, everyone.
And she's luscious. She is. And so we've come to the part of the show I like to call the shift, where I shift the questioning away from your amazing journey of wearing all these hats. It's like crazy. And to talk about current events, things that are happening today that are important for our progressive community.
Absolutely.
And don't forget to say the F, please, because if you don't say the F in shift,
yes,
then we have problems. You know, shift. Yeah.
Yes.
Can you say it?
Shift.
There it is. She did it. Okay. So hot off the presses.
Yes.
Okay. Judge Scott McAfee ruled that Fonnie Willis, the Fulton County DA, could continue leading the prosecution of the former twice impeached, 91 times indicted ex-president, but only if her former romantic partner, Nathan Wade, withdraws from the case. So he did withdraw from the case because it's more important that the case go on. The judge also threw in some criticisms of Willis's judgment in having the relationship with Wade. So basically, I know that you probably don't know the whole story about this, but The ex-president's attorneys were trying to get this case going. They're doing everything to stifle these cases. As you know, they're procrastinating and delaying. Because if you're an innocent person, you didn't do any of these things. Why would you be afraid to have the case?
Yeah,
you know. So he brought up the fact that she was having an affair with one of her prosecutors, her main prosecutor. So what do you think about this ruling that he left her on the case, but only if she dumped her boyfriend there, or ex-boyfriend, I guess?
I think so much of politics gets to be a distraction from what the real issues are, you know?
Well, that's what he's doing.
Yeah, that's exactly what
it is. You hit it on the head. What does this have to do with trying to overthrow the government?
Right.
I mean, really?
I think that, honestly, I just hope that they get down to it and do what needs to be done in that situation. I think it's going to be more games in the meantime, but I think that he definitely needs to be held responsible for the things that he likely did do. You know? Yeah. So.
Oh, absolutely. And to piggyback on the ex-president.
Yeah.
A couple of days ago at a rally, the twice impeached, 91 times indicted president. That's what I like to call him. Sometimes I call him Voldemort.
I love that.
My friends love that one. Said, now this is a quote. I'm going to quote exactly what he said, and I want your response to it, because you probably didn't hear this quote. And so I'd like to get a
candid response.
A candid response. Thank you. Quote, "Now if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole dash. That's going to be the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath for this country," unquote. A bloodbath. Now, you remember what happened on January 6th?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It was a bloodbath.
Yes.
There were a lot of people that got hurt very badly, died.
Yeah.
It was an awful day in our history. What do you say about him saying this, bringing up the word bloodbath, using that in a sentence, I guess?
I think he has lacked he's just always lacked empathy and an ability to, for lack of better terms, like read the room, but we're talking about a whole entire country here, right? You know, so it's not surprising to me in any way. In some ways, I feel like, what more of a bloodbath do you want with all that you put us through?
Why use that word?
Well, I use that word, but even so, like, just because it's not always physical blood, I was like, you have really affected people's lives, like, already. And, like, what more? I'm just curious what more I can take. I mean, Trump is actually a huge reason why I moved to Minneapolis. I woke up one day in Indiana, and he had won the election, and I walked outside, and there was Confederate flags and trucks driving outside of my house celebrating, and that's when I was like, girl, Miss Thing had to go at that point, you know?
Time to go.
Miss Thing had to go, yeah. So I just, in addition to that poor word choice, it's like, what more do you want to ruin for this country?
Yeah,
so.
Minnesota's a safe space now.
It is, and I'm very happy to be here.
Thank you, Minnesota. I love it. So we're gonna make a left turn here.
Yes.
Well, a right turn. left turn. We're going to talk about drag queen story hours that are happening in the country now. Now, you know this is a big issue
in the country.
Last week, there were stories in the news about protests in Detroit, Wadsworth, Ohio, and even in Greenwich Village in New York City regarding drag queen story hour. For those out there who don't know, Drag Queen Story Hour is a program where drag queens go to different venues and inspire a love of reading.
Yes.
That's what it is. While teaching deeper lessons on diversity, self-love, and appreciation of others. That's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So how you could be against this is crazy. Yeah. But why do you think right-wingers feel this is a threat to children? And how do you feel about these constant protests? Now, they're protesting all over the country right now about these drag queen story hours. And they're just – they're meant to uplift.
They are. And they do.
And they do.
They do. I think that there's a fear of what you don't understand. Mm-hmm. So most of these people that are protesting don't understand what's going on. I have a pretty radical opinion on drag and young people. I want to see it in high schools. I can say that finding drag for me is the source of my confidence. Because of drag, I have been able to learn so much about myself, about the world. It's where I gained people skills. It's where I gained directing skills. It's how I became an entrepreneur. And there is so much that people can learn through this art form. Oh, and just general creativity, of course, you know. So there's so much young people can learn. And if I had had this type of opportunity to even be exposed to it at a young age, my life would be different. But because people don't understand it, one, they're fearful of it. Two, I think that people are a little bit unfair to drag because they get to pick and choose when it's okay. I can assure you that the same people that are protesting, Mrs. Doubtfire is probably one of their favorite movies, you know? And it's okay when a straight man does it, but it's not okay for queer people to do it. Mm-hmm. And so that's why then you cannot pick and choose when it's okay and when it's not. I also think they have to assess the appropriateness. Drag has been forced underground for much of its existence, at least in the United States. So when you're talking about an art form in a certain setting, it becomes risque because that's the setting. It doesn't mean that that art itself, it's just like music, it's just like a painting. You know, it can be made to be, quote unquote, inappropriate if that's the environment it's in. But as an art form, it's just as valid as anything else. It's just as beautiful as anything else. And it's very, very appropriate for kids.
Yeah, just to read stories. Like The Cat in the Hat.
Yeah.
I mean, to sit there. I mean, being in drag is just a persona. And the idea of a drag queen story hour, for me anyway, is to inspire kids to read.
Right. And
that's,
I think, of Barney. Like, we have Barney growing up. What is the difference between someone dressing up as a dinosaur and someone else dressing up as a drag queen? As long as it's appropriate for kids, there's no difference, you know?
Yeah. When I was a kid, I remember they had a lady dress up like Snow White to read stories to us.
Same thing. You know, I would call that drag.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would.
She's dressing up as somebody she's not.
Yeah.
That's all it is. Anyway, the Supreme Court decided to stay out of a request made by an LGBTQ student group that was hoping, over the objections of administrators, to host a PG-13 drag show on the campus of West Texas A&M University. In my opinion, this court poses a clear and present danger to our community. Whatever happened to free expression? What are your thoughts about that? Free expression.
I think it's awful. I mean, I kind of talked about in another segment how I actually found drag in college. All of this stuff that we're talking about is just denying people's access to joy. I just don't really understand it. I think there are so many things that happen in the world that have direct detriment to other people that gets allowed or looked over or turned the other cheek to. But when it comes to something that is truly just making people happy, it's an issue. And I don't know if it's jealousy that, you know, as queens and queer people were able to find that type of freedom. I don't understand it. And I hope that gets changed. I do.
Yeah, Lalo.
Yes.
Yeah.
My life would be different if I didn't do it in college, for sure.
Well, the show is coming to an end here.
Yes.
So I know you have things you want to promote. And I think there's a couple of them that you want to promote. Is that right? Can you tell the audience a few things coming up in your career?
I think the biggest things I got going on right now, we talked about my makeup line. It'll be snacksbylala.com. Not launched yet, but it should be launching May 1st.
And snacks with an X, you said.
Yes, S-N-A-X by Lala. We're on Facebook and Instagram right now. Website coming very soon. Building it right now. But I think the biggest thing that, if you follow me, most people are excited for is I have the honor of opening for the Drag Race winner, Sasha Colby, on April 7th at the Fillmore. Yes, in Minneapolis.
All right.
Yeah, so she did a national search for people, and I got voted on from Minnesota. So if you're listening, you voted for me, thank you. This is going to be such a huge opportunity. So I've been in rehearsals. It's been a lot of dancing for me lately, and a lot of there is some fans involved. We got light-up fans. I'll give that secret away. So it's going to be a fabulous performance.
Oh, thank you, Lala. We have 33 seconds. I wish I could go on forever with you. Thank you so much, Lala, for coming
for
to the
me.
Show.
This is great.
And to my audience, I love you so much. We're going to wave goodbye and kiss you and hug you and love you.
Yes.
Thank you. This is Philip Anthony, and this is the Downright Upright Show. Here
stay
at AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. And stay fantabulous.
Stay
That's
fantabulous.
It. Yay.